Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Start with the LIV PGA Tour merger, along with the DP World Tour. This came out of nowhere. There is a reason that I've really taken a high road with all of this for a period of time, because I feel like the fans want one thing and one thing only, and that is to see the best play against the best. So in the history of mergers, let's take the ABA and the NBA. Now, suddenly across the spectrum in the NBA, you got a chance to see Julius Erving play. Suddenly you got a chance to see George McGinnis play. Artis Gilmore. Gilmore had been with the Kentucky Colonels, McGinnis with the Indiana Pacers, and Erving had been with the Virginia Squires and the New York Nets. And David Thompson was with the Denver Rockets, who then became the Nuggets. Suddenly, those players were in the NBA and playing NBA games. In the, you know, when the WHA had four teams absorbed by the NHL in a merger, suddenly the fans in the NHL had their chance to watch Wayne Gretzky play. Yes, Wayne Gretzky was in the WHA, and he got into the NHL because of the merger. They also got a chance to see the return of Gordie Howe and others, Bobby Hull. But it was Gretzky that was the prime guy that suddenly now NHL fans could watch Wayne Gretzky. They now had a chance to watch the best against the best. The NFL and AFL merged. Suddenly Joe Namath is playing against the Cleveland Browns in the first ever Monday Night Football game, among others. Leagues have failed and have caused the bigger league to get better. The USFL failed. And in the failure, it allowed Jim Kelly to go to the NFL. Reggie White, Herschel Walker. Steve Young. Suddenly, they were all in the NFL playing games. The best were playing against the best. That's all the fans want. The fans only want the best against the best. It's all they care about. They don't care about the politics of it. They don't care about the negotiations of it. They just want to see the best play the best. Well, in this case, now back to golf, you're going to get the best playing against the best again. That's why everyone enjoyed watching the Masters. John Rahm won it, outdueled Brooks Koepka. Right? Overtook Brooks Koepka, won. Phil Mickelson finished second at the Masters. Patrick Reed was in the top five or six. Now, Reed may not be the most popular player on the planet, but he's a name. And then there's the PGA, which Koepka won. Did it matter to the fans that Koepka is a LIV golfer? Oh, no. He was cheered as if it was Brooks Koepka. Did it matter to everybody that John Rahm won the Masters and he's a PGA player? No, the fans didn't care. Right? So the fans are the ones that win in this, because then they've got everybody back playing the best against the best. They want to see Bryson DeChambeau crank out a 350 to 400 yard drive. And they want to see that. And I've stayed out of the politics of it because I don't think that interests the fans, and it's not, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know all of it. But this, the PGA players are the ones I feel badly for in this. And that's for this reason. Everyone found out on Twitter. You know, we've watched for the last 15, 16 months. One PGA player after another say, get up and have to sit at press conferences and defend the tour versus LIV over and over again. No offense, that's Jay Monahan's job. That's his job. He should have been doing a press conference at every tournament instead of having Rory McIlroy and others do all the talking on his behalf. I can't stand when that happens. When something happens with Penn State football, who's the one sitting at the press conference? Okay, James Franklin. When something happens at Penn State basketball, who's the one sitting at the press conference? Okay. Mike Rhodes. Something happens with Bucknell basketball, who's the person who's going to have the press conference? John Griffin. Okay. Every time. And, oh, sure, the players will get a chance to go out and talk after the league guy talks. But in this case, week after week after week, it was, you know, Jordan Spieth, what do you think about this? Rory McIlroy, who became the chief spokesperson, what do you think about this? Every week. I mean, these guys just want to play golf. They don't want to go out there and have to answer questions when they're not the ones in the room making decisions. Monahan's the one in there making decisions. He needs to go out and he needs to do the talking. And I don't want to see a press release. Everybody knows how I treat press releases. Every time I get to the quote, what do I say? And Monahan said, blah, 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 blah. You want to know why I do that? Because I can't stand press releases. They're just well-crafted, and there's no way in heck the person actually said those words. They may have paraphrased it, and then it was cleaned up for the press release. But that's why I always say, blah, 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 because that's all it is. Get out there in front of a group, in front of a series of microphones. Talk. Talk. Monahan is going to finally meet with the players in 45 minutes in Toronto. They're there for the Canadian Open. One PGA Tour player said, it's insanity. The LIV Tour was dead in the water. It wasn't working. Now you're throwing them a life jacket? Is this the moral of the story? To just take the money? Callum Tarrant, who's ranked 159 in the world, told Golf Channel, is disappointed to be a PGA Tour member. The guys who have stayed loyal to the PGA Tour, it's kind of a kick in the teeth to them. Obviously, Rory was a huge advocate of the PGA Tour, and now it looks like all this hard work and sticking up for the PGA Tour was just left by the wayside. That's how a lot of people feel. Now, Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau had sued the PGA Tour. As part of this agreement, those suits get thrown out. And remember, guys like Koepka, Dustin Johnson, they got nine-figure bonuses to join LIV. So how is all this going to work out? And how much Saudi money is involved here? 9/11 Families United, which is a group of nearly 2,500 survivors of family members killed or injured in terrorist attacks, issued a statement today saying it was shocked and deeply offended by Tuesday's announcement. It said PGA Commissioner Jay Monahan co-opted the 9/11 community last year in the PGA's unequivocal agreement that the Saudi LIV project was nothing more than sports washing of Saudi Arabia's reputation. 9/11 Family United Terry Strata said, but now the PGA and Monahan appear to have just become more paid Saudi shills, taking billions of dollars to cleanse the Saudi reputation. Monahan said, quote, I understand the criticism. For me, you take the information you have at the time and make decisions in the best interest. Things have changed. This is the right time to have this conversation. Again, for the fans, for the most part, they just want to see the best play the best. That's what this is about. The ability of the best to play the best. 3:35, Neil Coulong will join us for Tuesdays with Neil. We'll talk about the NFL and also about gambling in the NFL. Isaiah Rodgers of the Colts is the latest to have his name linked. We'll come back with more in a moment, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
By the way, we talked yesterday about what Andrew Marchand reported about the possibility that Susie Culver and Steve Young would not return to ESPN. Now it looks like Chris Chelios on the NHL side is not going to return to ESPN with the Stanley Cup run being over with. This is just the beginning. There'll be other names there. There are others that will end up staying but taking pay cuts. This is all part of Disney trying to shed 7,000 employees and trying to save $5 billion in the process. And that doesn't include what they did with the Star Wars exhibit down at Disney World, which they shut down. We'll talk with Neil Coulong in a bit. Diamond Sports, Major League Baseball, they had a marathon hearing, and the judge ruled in favor of Major League Baseball and the four teams. Diamond Sports Group is bankrupt, and they stopped paying teams using Chapter 11 to do so, and they own 18 regional sports channels. It's well established that Diamond wants to go direct to consumer for all the Major League Baseball teams. And that means all the streaming. Now, Diamond presently owns those streaming rights for all their NHL and NBA properties and for 5 of the 13 Major League Baseball teams. But they also wanted, along the way, to do broadcast to interface with a second gambling theme show, the right to sell merchandise on the screen, or even if Major League Baseball decided to sell just the ninth inning of games. And these are all things they wanted. Right? And Manfred said in the hearing, he says, the chance that we allow you to make the decision as to how gambling is going to interface with our broadcast, which is a fundamental business decision, that's not going to happen. You're not going to have those rights. So we have an uneasy relationship. And to be honest with you, he's right. He needs to stand firm on that issue. And according to Chris Ripley, who's the CEO of Sinclair, who owned Diamond, that's how they pitched it to investors on an earnings call in 2021, that they planned on integrating gambling into their regional sports networks. The Pirates get $61 million. Now, they're not one of the teams involved in this. The Minnesota Twins are getting $60 million from Diamond Sports. They said that their contract runs out after this season. They said Diamond Sports Group last year offered $54 million in a renewal, which the team rejected. It's going to be $54 million the first year and $1 million each year after that. On top of 56, you know, 54 to 55 to 56, so forth. The Brewers deal with Bally Sports pays them $33 million a year and does not grow. And let's face it, almost every media deal has accelerators in it. And the Brewers happen to be one of the five Diamond Major League Baseball teams to sell the rights. He said Manfred said that the fee for the Braves massively undervalued. The Braves owner Liberty Media was a partner with Major League Baseball in bidding in 2019 for the 19 regional sports networks that Sinclair bought from Fox. Manfred testified Major League Baseball's bid was at least $900 million less than Sinclair's winning bid of $10.6 billion. Crazy. A lot of money being left out there. That's one thing. I mean, Major League Baseball is going to have a financial problem in their hands. All right. News, bottom of the hour. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, that was a quick news break. Okay. Do we have Neil? Go along.
He has not called in yet, so I'm going to say no.
Okay. I don't know if he has to call in or we call him. All right. Okay. Well, we'll get a hold of him here in a second, and we'll work our way through here. So back to the Liv situation. He's going to talk with the players. They can't find out on Twitter. I mean, that's believe me, when that happens, that's not right. Hey, you know what? You come to an agreement, and guess what? You get a hold of everybody you can personally. You know, I don't care if you have to set up a Zoom call or how you have to do it. All right? And I know of times where people have found out on Twitter or social media before they found out from the entity that made the decision, and they've been furious every single time. Furious every time. In other words, and they look around feeling like, hold on a second, why am I the last to know? Why does the rest of the world know? And that's how the players are feeling right now with what has happened. Now, what's in the deal? Who knows what's in the deal? Also,
right. We have Mr. Cooling on the line if you are ready. Sorry to cut you off.
There we go. Neil, sir, my friend, time for Tuesdays with Neil. Welcome.
As always, it is great to be here. It's another glorious Tuesday in our world. How are you doing?
It is a glorious Tuesday in our world. All right, so let's get to the issue of gambling. It has been raising its head. The NFL policy is, I think, a rather wide-open policy. You can't gamble on NFL games, period. But you can gamble on anything else. You just can't do it in the facility. What part of that is unclear?
I don't know. I honestly don't. Inside NFL facilities, the ones that I have been to anyway, there are placards and notices, and there's all kinds of stuff up that kind of spell out the rules, league rules, union notices, those kinds of things. As easy as it is to try to dunk on the NFL for hypocrisy, I don't think it needs to be explained how betting on NFL games is not something NFL players can do. So put that aside. The second part is the idea that it's hypocritical for the NFL to say, you can gamble on other sports, don't do it on our facility. I don't understand the connection between those two things, nor do I understand the challenge in that. Now, what I've heard, and I'm not able to confirm this, so I'm not going to name names or anything. It's not about this particular instance, but other ones, what I've heard is they got busted because they went outside the facility, went in their car, and didn't realize that their phone was still on the facility's Wi-Fi network. So, right. I can get that. I would hope that there'd be kind of a warning first for that sort of thing. The NFL, though, doesn't have room to breathe, and they're going to have to enforce this as strictly as they've written it up to be enforced upon any violation of it. That said, I would have thought every position coach who keeps contact with their players in the offseason, every head coach who does the same, every strength and training coach that they come across if and when they come into the facility, every general manager if necessary, every agent who, in some, depending on their deal, might not get paid if the player doesn't play because of the suspension, they all would have told them, gamble, do it at home, do it anywhere near the facility, and certainly don't bet on the NFL. I would have thought several have taken care of this, but apparently this is a significant problem around the league, and I don't get it. I really don't understand what the problem here is. Nothing to do with hypocrisy. This is basically just follow the rules. These aren't complicated. They're not challenging. This isn't anything that you have to exert special effort to avoid, kind of the way that the dietary supplement issue that blew up a decade and a half ago was. You really have full control over this. And I don't see any excuse for any of them to not be able to follow it, to be honest.
Here's the college rule, Neil, just to let you know how loose the NFL rule is. In college, if you are a gymnast and you decide to place a wager on an NBA game, you're not allowed to because the NCAA sponsors basketball. So you can't bet on a high school basketball game, you can't bet on an NBA game, and obviously you can't bet on a college game because it's a sponsored sport. Now, if you want to go to the racetrack and bet on the horses, sure, because horse racing isn't. That's how strict the NCAA policy is when it comes to this. The NFL, you just can't bet on NFL games, and you just can't do it at work.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of places that might have similar rules set up. The NCAA is as close to you're not allowed to gamble as you could be, I think. So for the NFL, the fact that they're having to readjust all of this, readjust their thinking as they go, because people keep getting picked off and serving pretty significant punishments for it, it baffles my mind. It really does. The issue that I see it too is all of the coverage of this is talking about how the NFL is wrong for doing this. It's completely acceptable for them to open up not even directly tied to them, but indirectly, if they're involved in helping lobby to get states to legalize gambling, fine. it's not something that's being done for them specifically. It's just a new stream of legal revenue for them. Of course they're going to get behind that because it's the fans generally who are doing it. They outnumber the professional athletes, believe it or not. There's going to be a lot more fans betting on games. They have to control it internally for obvious reasons. You know, I don't know how far back we need to go, but there was, you know, a World Series scandal. There was the NBA scandal from 20, 25 years ago. There's a reason they need to control it. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't be taking sponsorship money from gambling outlets. Two things are completely separate from each other. The player, though, betting at the facility, which I can see it being too close of a tie to the team itself, because what they're probably imagining is like a backroom poker game or something, you know, and I could see why they might want to curb that, especially when it's just don't do it here, okay? Go home and do it. You can do it at the airport. You can do it at the grocery store. Don't do it here. That's all. It's not hard to follow that, and you really don't have a leg to stand on either. This is not something that you're justified in kicking up a fuss over, in my opinion.
And I agree with you. And this is something that the NFL, it's by being the big entity, they're the big target. I'm sorry, their policy, there's nothing wrong with their policy. Their policy, to me, is the right policy. It gives the freedom of them to be adults. It just puts the restriction on, hey, look, right? Work is work. Now, I can understand, like, somebody making a mistake of going in the parking lot and you're still on the Wi-Fi. Now, that part I got. I just go a little further to the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to say you should consider yourself lucky, but at the same time, you don't have to go very far to see what the NCAA is doing. You know, do you want that? I mean, that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense either from the NFL player standpoint. So why don't you just take what you have, follow the rules, and for the sake of the entire organization, just do it the way they're asking you to do it. That's all. You know, otherwise this is going to get, you know, the NFL has as big a target on their back as anything else in the United States. They're going to have people coming down. Opponents of gambling are going to come after them for this kind of thing. They have to show that they're doing something about it. So, yeah, you know, and the fact that this comes up in June, it's almost as if they you know, wait to release this information now so there's something to talk about. You know, it's a compelling topic. It is interesting because it's new. We don't have a whole lot of experience with it. But the level of controversy that's surrounding it just amazes me. I don't see what's so complicated about it. It's very black and white. You're either in compliance or you're not, and it seems like the only way you could not be in compliance is if you completely and actively disregard what you're supposed to do and do it wrong on purpose.
So that brings us to examples. Wouldn't common sense tell you that the Calvin Ridley situation tells everyone how strict they're going to be about it? Because, I mean, he wasn't even playing at the time.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I don't want to suggest conspiracy, but I will say that he was in an excellent position to be a scapegoat. And they had him dead to rights. You know, it's a violation of the rules. It's not uncommon, in my opinion, for the NFL to make a big thing out of the first one. And in a way, you kind of need to do that just to show everybody this is the process, this is how it's going to work. And you want that standing example to be the extreme one, the big one to show everybody, you know, you don't want to be suspended for this amount of time. Follow the rules. And what Ridley did was way too close to what they're trying to prevent, which is any form of association with a bet, a wager, however you want to define it, on an NFL product. They don't want you doing that, and I think it's completely reasonable that they don't want you doing that. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So to have that standing up and then to have each subsequent one coming out, which kind of seems like it might, you know, kind of vary in severity, but to know all of that, to see that, and to either blatantly ignore it or pull the Le'Veon Bell and act as if oh, I had no idea that was the rule. It just seems silly to me. Le'Veon Bell being the one that told the police officer he wasn't aware that he wasn't allowed to drive while he was high. Like, well, I don't know how you missed that. They go over that pretty intensely in driver's ed, and you know, everywhere that you go, it's not something that you're allowed to do. This to me is it's on the same level of that. Like, if you're pleading ignorance to it, I don't think you're going to buy a whole lot of support, but you will get a lot of ridicule for admitting that you don't know something that should be very easily understood by the average person.
How do you view, for example, NFL Red Zone? They do a lot of fantasy football and points at the bottom. And fantasy football, when you're talking about DraftKings, FanDuel, is high stakes as opposed to the neighbors getting together and saying, hey, I drafted my team. How do you view that? And what do you think fantasy football has done to increase viewership of games?
I think, and I feel like I'm outing myself with this. I'm in the minority of people my age, my demographic, that doesn't really play fantasy football. I did a while ago.
Neil, I have never played fantasy football. Never. I've been asked so many times, and I've always said, nah, I don't feel like doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of a standard question that you get. What's your fantasy team looking like? Not even do you play. It's really just kind of a standard thing. I view it a couple different ways, and I think those two questions intersect. I follow it because I need to know about it for the sake of my job. I'm not particularly interested in it. Maybe it's because I have to do it for work. It doesn't excite me. I'm also not a big bettor. I don't really get into that. The presence of that form of game, and states still debate whether it's gambling or not, it seems pretty clear that it fits under the general umbrella of gambling.
Yes.
Certainly the daily fantasy. It's brought a completely different perspective of football to the viewing audience. Now, point one that I would make is this is really why it's justified for the NFL to do what they're doing, because the fans are the ones playing these games. It's not meant for the players, you know. It's always a funny bit you get in training camp when they're not talking about anything else. Where would you draft you on your fantasy team? Oh, I'd take me number one overall, that whole thing. Whether they're actively playing or not, I don't know. I have no clue, but clearly they're not allowed to do that. They weren't allowed to do it then, and they're not allowed to do it now. It's not about the players. It's about the fans watching the product. They're allowed to do it, so why shouldn't the NFL be involved with that? It's brought people who aren't necessarily interested in the team, and I say this, you're poking fun. I don't mean anything against the lovely fan base, the Houston Texans, but it's kind of hard to root for that team over the last 20, 30 years. The Jaguars. What if they really aren't into the team that's in their market, or they're more into the players of the league, which is really a modern, younger person perspective of sports. They're going to get into daily fantasy. They're going to get into their fantasy team. If they're watching the product, if they're consuming it because of fantasy, and call that gambling if you want, that's great as far as the NFL is concerned. They're doing it responsibly. They have avenues to do that legally. Then great, good for them. Catering to that in the red zone only makes sense. If by product they are talking about relevant information to the people who are watching. And I'm a two-screen guy plus the computer. I've got a game on, I've got red zone on, and I'm probably watching another game on my computer. Putting all of that together, if I had fantasy interest, I think Red Zone would make a lot more sense. For me, I just like to know where each team is and everything, just to get a sense of what's going on in the league. Red Zone is probably built more for the fantasy user, but sure, it fits well with the game that you're watching. It fits well with the experience, and that's why it's so popular. You know, they go hand in hand. So I think there's a natural value that comes with it from a fan's perspective, and they're going to continue to watch it. It's very popular. Scott Hansen does a great job. He's a very well liked,
oh, yeah,
very popular guy.
Yes, he does.
Media. It's fun to watch. He makes it enjoyable, and you get to see a lot more football. For me, I'm you know, kind of a one game guy. I like to watch, you know, football be played. That's just me. But I totally get that there are people that might not be interested in kind of the somewhat slow nature of a football game that you aren't emotionally invested in. So I don't think there's any issue with it. I definitely get why people would want to do it. And fantasy is a massive business on its own. It's probably a billion-dollar industry just from the NFL's perspective. So I get why they're doing what they're doing. I definitely don't see a reason why it wouldn't continue.
Well, yeah, I understand that. That answers, you know, spot on. That's how I feel about it. I always have one question for fantasy people. I guess you're allowed to pick a defense. I said, what happens on the day where that defense is facing your team? I said, how do you root in the game?
And I always get these like fantasy.
I get all these, or the player that you're playing. Oh, it turns out I've got Lamar Jackson. He's playing the Steelers.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. How are you viewing this game?
some people view it as a win-win. You're getting something out of that game either way. I see it as a lose-lose because it's like right. I'm either losing in fantasy or the team that I follow is losing. I don't really like that. I'd rather not have two outcomes. just right. Give me the one. I don't want to root for Lamar Jackson. All due respect to him. I don't want to say, well, the Steelers lost, but at least the Ravens defense did well. That sounds worse to me, in fact, than just the Steelers losing. So to me, it's not a hedge that makes any sense. I get why people do that, though. It just usually I tell them, don't tell me. I don't care about your fantasy team.
I mean, that's the part that always cracks me up. I go, excuse me, how conflicted are you today? Well, I mean, I need to do well, but I need my team to win. I said, can't you do what I do, just relax and watch the game?
Yeah, like go get some chips, you know, go take a walk. It's too much, you know, and maybe that's a question of investment, and maybe the younger generation is much more invested in something else that I'm not into the same way that, you know, I'm invested in something they're not. And there's a middle ground there, at the very least, that our Sundays during the NFL season have a good amount of investment. So there's plenty to go around, you know. That's why the NFL is as popular as it is. It took them probably a little bit longer than it should have to get into fantasy, because I was big into fantasy when I was a kid.
Sure.
You can get the newspaper and tabulate the scores yourself. I was a big fan of that. But my investment is with the product itself, and it's a smaller market, but we're strong. We're proud. Mm-hmm. We want to watch football. We don't really, you know, care about points that are scored outside of the game that's on the field.
Never a gamble to have Tuesdays with Neil. Sir, thank you.
Definitely. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to next week already.
You got it already. Thanks, my friend. Neil Coulong joining us. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. The SEC, as we mentioned, is going to go with 8 conference games in 2024. They are going to announce their full schedule a week from tomorrow. It'll be on Wednesday, June 14th, and they'll show it on the SEC Network. Now, obviously, they have T-shirts that they'll put out with schedules for all the schools on it. They did have some T-shirts for 9-game schools, for a 9-game schedule. And what they're doing is they're being shipped to other countries around the world just as shirts. And I guess they were shipped out to do that. They're the first 16-team conference to play only 8 league games. So there you go. All right. And they've also reset their fines. If you rush the field or the court, it's $100,000 first offense. Do it a second time, $250,000. Third time, $500,000. They are resetting everybody at zero because of the new numbers. And Texas A&M Athletic Director Ross Bjork was asked about playing Texas in 2024, and he said, quote, when the league expands, we prefer to play Texas as soon as we can. So that looks like that rivalry is going to get back on track immediately when Texas enters the league. And that's the story there. And Big Ten basketball coaches, Brett McMurphy on Twitter, has put out that Big Ten basketball coaches are in favor of adding UConn to the Big 12. They said UConn is in the mix as an all-sports addition to the Big 12, according to sources. All right, news top of the hour, then our play-by-play call of the day coming up next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.